We will begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee, September 23rd, 2013, and it is 6:01 p.m. Could you please take a minute to review the Finance Committee meeting minutes from September 9th, 2013, and let me know if they meet with your approval.
I'm good.
To meet with everyone's approval. Okay, then, you know, we've got about 45, 50 minutes or so. Patrick, you just had a quick question. Well, here, let me set it up this way. Earlier this morning, I received emails from three Finance Committee members regarding questions on certain bills that came up in the last check register. Patrick, you have your request was for Frank Cooney.
Yeah.
Those were all bid items. It was for furniture, and it probably is a 21st century as well as library equipment that we went out to bid on last spring, so we're finally paying those bills.
Okay.
And Drew?
And Frank Cooney do we go to him, or like you said, we just go out to bid on all
the
furniture?
We go out to bid every year. Every year you'll start to see that we're going out for bid. I usually start probably January, February, mm-hmm. and we'll go out for bid for the following year's furniture. Just as a reminder, we're almost done with the implementation of 21st century furniture at the elementary schools. Mm-hmm. So this year was the second year of 21st century implementation, as well as the Hadley Library. So everything was taken up.
Do we as a precedent for furniture dealers, have we ever considered long-term contracts, much as we do for some other vendors, and try to get some price breaks, or is it always per bid?
It has to be a public bid.
Okay.
It has to be a public bid.
Thank you.
By school code.
School code.
Now, when you said that K through 5, we're almost done.
Yeah,
that includes the 14, but the 13-14 budget.
Yes.
Not as the last year we wanted, but the 13.
That's correct. 13-14 are the ones that we just bought this summer. So next spring or next late winter, you'll start hearing me beat the drums for implementation. I have my guys, meaning departments and Department of Buildings and Grounds, they're going to go out and going to give me a count of how many classrooms we have left to do in each of the elementary buildings.
I had done that math at one of the meetings, and I thought it was still...
We're a year or two away from finishing.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was like we weren't halfway there.
Oh, no. I think we're halfway there.
This was the big push.
This was a big push.
Right, and that got us to about half.
Yeah, and I will do another big push this year. And, you know, a lot of the rooms really aren't being used in terms of their original intent. So unless it's a full classroom, I don't implement 21st century with desks, with furniture, equipment, technology, and so forth. If it's a small workspace or something along those lines, we're not going to spend money.
Right.
This is truly dedicated for classrooms.
Understood. And when they're there, I think it's really beneficial.
It seems to be has been very successful so far. Drew, you had a question?
I had two.
And just remind me, what were they again?
Sam's Club and
Lowry McDonald. McDonald. Yeah. Same thing as Frank Cooney. They were the other successful bidder for the majority of the furniture that we purchased this summer.
Okay, so this was part of that,
yeah,
that bid.
They are the two big players. Frank Cooney and Lowry McDonald are the big players in school class, in school furniture here in Chicago.
That's like one guy, so it sounded like it.
Yeah. No,
it's like a company, though. So.
And at Sam's Club, that's, we run over there for supplies and things that the buildings pick up or at request. And it could be for any number of different things.
So it was, does the district have a membership? Is that
yes, we do.
Okay.
We have a membership, and it's myself. It's Dave Scarmano, Director of Buildings and Grounds. Mostly the guys from
the
department. Yeah, Buildings and Grounds guys.
Okay.
Run over there and picks things up. And we also now have the courier that's back in after Dan's retirement. So he'll be doing most of the picking up for us.
Okay. Okay. So this is. But it just said there's multiple invoices.
Yes,
maybe.
Well, you'll see.
Understand what that meant.
You'll see a lot of those, and I try to get them. First of all, Gail downloads that information through Excel spreadsheets, and she provides she attempts to provide as much detail as we can. But there are other times when I have to go in and try to provide a little greater detail, just so that there's some clarity.
And it looks like there's just a lot of miscellaneous small dollar amount of supplies.
A lot of those requests go in support of some of our ELL programs, the preschool programs. They just, snacks and supplies and things like that.
Sure. Okay. You've answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll take those back when you're when you guys are done reviewing them.
You guys want?
I had one question.
Yes, you did.
Well, I actually have two because I had an ongoing question.
The one that kept going?
The one that keeps going every time I see your bill.
A run-on question.
Yeah. And, run-on question. You know, I try to provide you as much detail as possible. I'm referring to the homeless reimbursement taxes and so forth. And that's something that just kind of pops up on us.
I didn't know in the law, the statute, was that I thought it was if you began the school year with us, then we had to provide you transportation all the way through the school year. But if you haven't found a new home, and you, you went homeless the last school year, then we still have to provide.
Still got to keep going. And I will tell you that we have had issues with one or more families over the past couple of years where they've gone on 2 or 3 years at a time.
What I look at is like this, and if there's somebody who's homeless, we certainly need to provide them everything we can to get them to school. It's very expensive to pick up on a taxi each day and go home and get a taxi back.
It's 55 to 60 thousand a year.
Yes, it was 68, I think, last year. It was a lot. And it's 2,500 right off the bat, so obviously we have people reoccurring. But I was looking at the addresses on the bills, and I'm like, well, it's not like a mission, you know, here where they're living in a shelter or somewhere. They're living somewhere with grandmother or aunt Lucy.
Friends.
Right. So at some point, I didn't know that that was still considered homeless in the statute, I guess it is.
Yeah, and we've actually...
Because there's a school right across the street from, like, one, you know, from a couple of them.
We've actually had kids where we picked up in Chicago, mm-hmm. or we had to provide them split transportation with Chicago. Now we do get some reimbursement because we will partner with the either the receiving or the sending district. So sometimes we do get some degree of reimbursement, but nothing that significant.
But didn't we talk, Joe, last month or so to say that we want to bring this up as a policy discussion? I mean, we're bound and tied to the students.
Yes. This is not something that's board policy.
This is way beyond us. This is federal government. It's generally where the student originally went to school. So whatever occurred that made them homeless, they found a place to stay. So we transport them no matter where.
But we have avenues to, from what I read, we have avenues and opportunities to, like Joe said, if there's a school across the street, work with that district to transfer the responsibility to that school, per se, I thought.
I believe ultimately it's the parents',
decision
where they're going to educate their child, is my understanding of that law.
And I'm certain we monitor this to make sure people are using it correctly and not to get around the system, I guess.
We're limited on
how much
monitoring we can do.
It's very limited. Basically, they're saying they're homeless. It is a hands-off approach from our end of things. Julie's very, she's accurate on this. Very little that we do.
Gotcha.
Once they report, we take the assumption that they are homeless, and we will provide the transportation and schooling for them. We do not investigate. We do not look into any other issues.
Well, you have some ability to do that after a while, but it has to be at least 18 months, and you can't, you know, then you have to wait another period of time. You also have to provide transportation, even if they wouldn't get it if they were residing in a district, like if they just live 3/4 of a mile away or whatever, and if they're still homeless, if they request transportation, then we have to provide it. So it's just a different set.
Which the cost of that is so far less than going from the ones in 72nd and the south side and the north side of the addresses I looked at last year. It's a lot of money, so it pops out of the budget, and you're
good
like,
question.
Well, why is this, you know, at some point you can pay for rent for their family, for their whole family, less expensive than use the bus that's right at the bus stop down from the apartment. So you mean, to me, I understand it's a statute, and I know there's laws that don't make sense. And
but there's way we can control that, though, right? Again, though, there's avenues that we can look at to say, are there avenues that we can look at to say public transportation versus private transportation or taxis?
Do we have to use taxis? No. But it, ultimately, they're probably less expensive than, because we don't have our own transportation department here or own our own buses. That's what somewhat puts us at the mercy of going towards a taxi service.
But we have pace.
Taxis or buses.
Yeah.
Public transportation is not an option.
It's not. Yeah,
it's not.
Not an option. Especially if some of these kids are kindergartners, first, second, third grade. They're not high school kids or older. And we do meet at least once, if not twice a year. It is typically the superintendent. Mm-hmm. Myself, it will be Karen from TLA, and it will be the ladies from upstairs, and Jerry Atkins does a lot of homeless work for our kids, and then we have a homeless liaison too, and that was Heather Ritten with us for a number of years. And Julie, you were part of that too, weren't you?
Well, because I do the grant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it's attached to the McKinley Vento Act, which we receive around $6,000 or $8,000 a year in reimbursement. So.
Of course, I hate that. This leads me to my mind starts thinking in the other way. There are also kids who don't live in our district anymore. Are there? And how do we monitor them who come to our district? They transport themselves because they're using an old address where they used to, but they want to stay in their school because they like our schools. You know, what do we do? We have a monitoring system for that, because I understand each year you have to register, but you don't always have to provide proof of. Do you have to provide each year proof of?
Not if you're already registered.
Right.
Some districts do, you know, they do investigate and they follow up. We have not done that, although we do monitor things like when we send out mailings and we get returns because they're no longer there. That's a flag that we should follow up. And we have, when we have reason to think that a given family may no longer be actually eligible, then we have followed up on that.
And that is-
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You're free to do that. It's not
under
statute. I just look at it and say, well, sure, you know, if how much do we have? Do we know? What historically have we seen? Because obviously we have an overburden. We have too many students. If we have students coming here various ways that shouldn't be here, I just want to make sure that we're monitoring that at the highest level. To me, I think if it's not too time-consuming, somebody doesn't say this costs too much, why not have proof of residency each year? Why did we pull back from that, or maybe we never did? Because once you're in kindergarten, you're in.
But we do have a system in place where we do monitor addresses. I know Mary Lou, the registrar, works down in my office, and you know, we probably review a dozen cases a year about people that may have a question, returned mail, any number of issues. Right. People request to have us. Yeah, they want to come and live with an uncle. I had one earlier this year where the mom and dad said they couldn't control the child, so they wanted a child to come and live with an uncle here at Glen Allen. So we denied that request. But we do those types of things. So it's almost 6:15, and we do have some pretty significant things to get through here. So tonight is our first walkthrough of the 2014 Elementary School Facility Planning and Capital Project. Julie was great enough to put together a brief PowerPoint presentation. So I'll be going back and forth between the PowerPoint presentation and the reports that you have in front of you. So, as everyone is well aware, we have a significant issue in this district regarding portables. We have 32 portables, 10 at Hadley, and 22 spread amongst the elementary schools, some more than others. In Paul's board report that he had sent out, the superintendent's report on September 9th to the Board of Education, after serious consideration and a lot of discussion, we decided as an administrative team that the best course of action may not necessarily be to build innovation labs of each of our elementary schools, but rather to confront or reduce our reliance on portables in the school district. So we as a team have been meeting. We continue to meet. We have FGM architects in a room with us. We have a setup. We have a standard meeting every morning at 7:30. And so we're still developing those the thoughts, the concepts, the designs, everything along those lines. So this is just your first blush, your first run-through in terms of what that may look like. On the first page of your board report, I thought it would be helpful to provide you with... You've got a copy there, Dean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. first page of the report here sets forth the Lincoln or the portable information. We have the portable location, the number of portables in each building, what was the condition like when we installed it, whether it was new, used, or like new is one description that I have, whether they were leased or owned, the date of installation, and a replacement date. I just wanted to draw your attention. Forest Glen South Unit, Julie brought it to my attention today. That unit was actually installed in 2002 instead of 2005. So, what does the plan look like? Well, it looks like we would like to build 16 new classrooms, four at each of the elementary buildings, four buildings district-wide, so a total of 16 classrooms. We'd like them to be flexible spaces that can accommodate 21st century learning. And we would like them designed not as maybe a typical classroom, which is four block walls and a floor and a ceiling, but maybe not as high-end as what we were envisioning for the Innovation Lab, but rather something that would provide for flexible learning space. And we're still in the process of determining what that may look like. We, as an administrative team, we look at lighting, we look at open areas, we look at flexible walls, glass instead of block. We look at a lot of different things to try to get an idea and a vision of what that may ultimately look like. So we're still working through all that. A little further back in your board report here, you'll see some schematic designs. You'll see some site plans in terms of where we think would be the best spot or best area of a building for these particular additions to be built. A little further back again, we put a 3D dimensional drawing in terms of what that may look like as an attachment to a building. And then we've tried to come up with some cost estimates for you to take a look at. And again, these are our first go around with that.
Can
yes,
one question?
Yes, absolutely.
We talked about 32, and we could maybe replace up to 16, somewhere 16. Between 14 to 16. So when we did that, is the constraint on that the money that we think we have right now, or is the constraint that the facilities couldn't have a plan to have all 32 get rid of?
I think it's a two-phase question. First of all, financial consideration. Secondly, how much bigger can we actually make the buildings on the sites that they're located? You know, we've experienced the district, except for Franklin, our oldest building, are all single-story buildings. So that really, it creates some concerns or some issues for us, and how much sprawl can we continue to have? Now, well, that's another question. You can go up, but there's also a lot of infrastructure work that goes on when you're talking about constructing a second floor to a building.
Sure.
So, you know, we have had those discussions, and that may be where we ultimately go. I'll give you an example. The addition that we're talking about at Churchill, the long-term plan is, you know, whatever that long-term plan is, 5, 10 years down the road, I don't know, is that we would possibly eliminate that diamond off the front of the Churchill School. Well, we're talking about putting an addition that you'll see in this proposal here on the north end of Churchill, but build it so it can sustain or will hold a second story eventually.
That's all
that's where we want to go.
And the existing buildings aren't built.
They are not built.
They don't have a flex core or whatever.
They're not built to hold up the second story addition.
That's a key point, because at that point the construction cost.
Well, they escalate dramatically.
Yeah. I just think people might ask.
Oh, I bet you they will.
That right now we already have space for all these students on all these pieces of property. And so if our concern is to get rid of the portables, and we already have the space taken up today, why can't we make a permanent space? And I just think we need to make sure that people understand we think about that, and that that's still in the long-range plan we could possibly consider that. So we have some financial constraints right now.
Absolutely.
That lets us focus on doing this work that we're talking about.
Well, and a little further in the board report, we talk about funding and the alternatives that we're looking at. We talked about funding just through reserves, excuse me, but even that places some significant restraints. So that's why we went out and looked at alternatives. So,
Joe? Let's go back a second, though, because I think this is an important point. We may be able to house these students the way we are housing them, and then therefore just add classrooms. But our common area has so much stress on it right now.
Right.
And that's so when you build a classroom, there's a ratio of student to bathroom stall. There's a ratio for cafeteria. And we're really
doing this in edit. We're not doing it for code, I can tell you that. And that's why there's so much transition issues and things like that at our schools, and you hear that. And the reason is you've got too many kids in the space. So even if you place classrooms, you really, one of these plans shows a cafeteria included, that's needed. So that common area space can't get lost when you're talking, when people ask those questions, because you have to add common area space. And we haven't done that with the portable.
Well, that's a major concern at like a Lincoln school, because I will tell you that it's almost like a couple of traffic guards when you have teachers there telling this group of kids to stop and another group of kids to pass. So, you know, I've seen four classrooms come together in that central space at one time, and it really is like a red
and
red.
We're talking about in one of these plans about trying to fix some of that.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Well, and one more point, too, that shouldn't be lost is that you're actually increasing your program by going to full-day kindergarten. So not only are you
we have
space there.
Yeah.
If we get to that.
Yes.
We all want it, but
We haven't got there.
Yeah.
So I've given you a little idea in terms of what we've talked about. Now I've had questions about timeline. We've identified Franklin as a school to do next summer because of existing stormwater issues and the location of where this construction would take place. We have stormwater issues at all of our buildings. Every time we touch a building, we need to address those concerns. Across the street at Forest Glen, I put a little paver parking lot over here a couple of years ago, and we had to go through a whole stormwater calculation and proposal. And I will tell you that we are within inches of exceeding the work that's been done there. We have storage pipes instead of a big detention field like we have at Hadley or Ben Franklin. We have underground pipes, 12-inch pipes or whatever that store that have excess capacity. But now we're done. We've reached our limit. Just as it is at Lincoln, and just as it is at Churchill, where you have essentially open fields for detention areas.
I do have a question about that, just the timeline, because before we had talked about trying to add a second school, and I believe it was Lincoln in the initial presentation of this. And I understand the stormwater issues. Have we met with the village or County of DuPage and asked for any expediting at this point to help us alleviate this problem so we could do two buildings?
That's what we're talking about now. And what at least my initial thoughts were is we're going to take all of these proposals at the same time, and if one starts to fall off because there's just too much work involved in bringing that recommendation forward, then that's what we'll do. But my thoughts are we're going to proceed full steam ahead.
Like try to do all four next summer.
If you know, we'll start the permitting and application process for that now. And if they work, okay, then maybe we'll keep them going.
Have we met with the village at all?
We have not yet.
It's too early in the design process. But another option at Lincoln is that we might be able to modify that basin because it's two isolated classrooms. We might be able to modify that rather than go with the full blown tank system in the short term.
In the short term, yeah, I saw that because that was one of my questions. Why we would not do the parking lot, which would help us save, you know, safety issues, because they do have, they've raised safety issues there because they don't have a parking lot. So you actually can alleviate that. To me, I understand stormwater, I understand the extra steps you have to take, but often if you work and you let the village know now, today, like you walk into them tomorrow and say, hey, by the way, I don't want you to read this in the paper, but we're thinking of doing this. It's not approved. We want you to be on our team to help us get this done sooner than later. What can we do with you to help expedite our permitting process? Because in some of the schools, three of them, we have stormwater. And I know DuPage changed their stormwater. Where are you at with accepting their new stormwater code? I mean, to me, that's a statement. That's a meeting that I would have now.
And that's the point.
Well, can I give you a quick snapshot? Because I just had some conversations on this with the civil engineer. We're looking at October 8th is when we're going to be getting some preliminary capacity studies. But I think even before we get into stormwater, we may meet with Stacy Holtzberg over there to talk about the architecture and the variance process and just big picture things. That can happen within the next week.
Well, I think that's a great idea.
It's time to start.
Yeah, as soon as once you have a plan, I mean, you can always stop with the village.
Right.
But the sooner they can give you their insights, and they like to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the sooner they know, they will look to help you. has been my experience.
And Joe, we've worked with them on many occasions,
right.
So we have a good working relationship.
Right. Right.
And you know what? I will tell you that the village, when we did the Hadley parking lot, they really did expedite that for us. We were originally told it was going to take a couple of months, and it took.
You can't put it on this, I understand. You can't put it on the permitting process. But we work hand with the hand village on a lot of things. And they these are our kids, and it's their kids too.
So we get that.
Okay, that's what I'm making sure.
Okay, so the preliminary cost that you see in your packet is for approximately $10.9 million to put on the existing additions, the four classroom additions. That does not include any remodeling work in the central part of Lincoln. The funding. You know, Joe, you brought up a good point a few weeks ago and it started the wheels turning. So Paul and I have met over the past week with two representatives from firms that we do a lot of financial work with. First of all, William Blair is a national firm that does a lot of bond placements and so forth. They have an opportunity for us here for some borrowing. And then we met with MB Financial, which is the district's bank, who we've had a relationship for, I'm going to say, at least 10 years. So we called each of those companies up. They gave us a very preliminary presentation. We're due to meet with them again this week. And what we've asked them to do is provide two different alternatives, or a series of alternatives, but we would be looking to borrow $5 or $7 million to be paid back over 10 or 15 years. These implications, this would not have any implications to our debt extension, to levying taxes, or anything else to our taxpayers, but rather funded through existing operational funds through the operation and maintenance fund.
Are they giving you any capital budgeting ratios or anything coming back from, you know, like a net present value or weighted cost of capital of all of this stuff that's going to be coming back at the interest rates that they're going to be charging?
We haven't got there yet. We just, as I said just a moment ago, we asked them for the type of information, and this was, you know, a 20-minute meeting. They got a phone call 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago, and they put together a very brief presentation, and we'll be looking for plans and updates from them. Again, we're going to meet this week. And my plan is for them to come back and give a presentation to the Finance Committee at our next meeting, because I'd like them to come in and give their presentation about their history, their financial firm's history, their history with the district, and what they can do for us.
They allow you to ask them those questions.
We just did.
And we told them the type of people who are on the Finance Committee, who said, you better be ready. You better be prepared, because these are these are the individuals who know this work exceedingly well. So
we've met with them. We're looking at $5 to $7 million in borrowing. The types of funding instruments that are looking for are looking at are a debt certificate and a direct placement tax exempt bonds. MB has already told us they would love to hold this. This isn't something that they would make a transaction and sell. He says this is the type of transaction they would look to hold. William Blair, you know, they have their own way of providing their financing. But, again, they are the ones who did the placement for the bonds back in 97 and 2000, in the early 2000s. So we have a long history with them. They know our district very well.
When's that presentation?
We're going to have that at the next Finance Committee meeting. So I believe it's October 15th or 13th, something like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Yeah, we got a little break. You do get an extra week break. You've been working so hard, we decided to give you a week.
So the plan is, in that almost 3 weeks from tonight, we're going to probably be ready to bring back some very tentative designs. We'll have some presentations for you in terms of funding mechanisms. And I think it's really a very exciting time here in the district. I think this is just a great recommendation, and I love the concept of reducing our reliance on portables. I just think it's a great way to go. Over the next few years.
I agree.
We are looking to do this, as I've said all along, start next year at Franklin, 2014, and then if we can keep the work going, we look at another building next summer. I can't make any promises. I think our professional people will be able to get the work done. I think the permitting and application process is what may take us some time.
Do you have time to handle any site plan or...
Yeah, how about if I get through this and then we'll still have 15 or 20 minutes to be able to, so you can ask some questions around, okay? I don't want you to lose sight of capital projects. We are going to do some roofs next year. We need to start that work. Our newest roofs are probably 15 years old, so we really do need to start to take a look at that work. We're going to propose doing about $750,000 worth of hard construction work. That's what's in your proposal here. We have not determined exactly which buildings we'll go after. Part of it does have to go to Lincoln, because Lincoln, I applied for a grant last year, and we received a $50,000 grant. It cannot go towards new construction. It has to go towards existing facilities. So we will pick a portion of that building that doesn't stand a chance of being touched in any additional site or any additional building work that we may do. We do know that the central area of Lincoln needs to be done, but you know, we're talking about redeveloping that area. This is certainly not the year to look at a roof over there. So I'm thinking something more easterly or westerly, but certainly not the center of the building. And we'll be bringing those recommendations as we lock them down, and my bet is we'll have something for you to take a look at at the next Finance Committee meeting. We've talked about additional, or we're going to talk just very briefly about additional information, and that we'll always maintain the three-step process, which is Finance Committee review, BOE discussion, and then BOE action. And so we gave you this presentation this evening just to give you your first blush in terms of what our plans are for the elementary schools over the next couple of years, as well as capital projects for next year. You have a series of spreadsheets and drawings and designs and so forth that are attached to your board packets. I think we have probably 15 or 20 minutes to either I can answer some questions or Ron and I can take it.
Really? You're going to ask a question? I'm surprised.
I'm asking a short question. A really short question. Amendment 25. Amendment 25 for this package, and it talks about roofs.
Correct.
I think the numbers might be reversed.
Yep. Patrick brought that to my attention.
So you've already got that. Okay.
Yep.
Fine. And I'm done.
Do we
see how quick that was?
Yeah.
That said
it's Joe, can you?
I was like, wow.
No,
okay, Joe,
we interview tomorrow and Wednesday evening for the construction manager. So we had 13 firms apply for the position with the district. Ron and I took last weekend and reviewed it. It was, to me or to us, I guess it was kind of striking that of the 13 firms, our top five, we had the same four. Not necessarily the same order, but if you took the top five firms, we had the same four listed in some variants of order. So we are going to interview Frederick Quinn, ICI, which is International Contractors, Nicholas and Associates, Frederick Quinn, and Gill Bank. All well-known firms here in the area. They'll come in. They'll be giving half-hour presentations followed by 15 minutes of questions. We're going to do two interviews tomorrow night, two on Wednesday night, and then my bet is we'll be making our mind up by this weekend. We've put together a collection of what I consider very good questions, and then we've also developed a decisional matrix that will help us weigh the important criteria that we're judging is necessary to make a decision like this. And as I said, my bet is we'll walk out of here Friday afternoon or something with that decision in terms of who we're going to recommend for the work. So, Joe.
I was just going to go back to the roofs really quick. There's no warranties remaining on our roofs. The warranties are all expired?
No, like I say, they're at least 15 years old. They typically warranty them for what, up to 10 or... As long as you bought the warranty for, but our warranties are gone.
Are they gone? Okay.
Well, that was done with a previous architect, a lot of that work, so... Normally, it's a 1 to 2 year installation warranty,
right.
And then you have a product warranty if you maintain it properly too.
So we're not let's go with the future roofs then. When we put a new roof on, what warranty for the membrane are we going to expect?
Well, you can dial that up based on the product to specify. There's a direct correlation, and a lot of times we put on the mod bid SCBS cap sheets and. You might be able to get a 10, 15, 20-year warranty on that roof, depending on the thickness that you go into. But we haven't had any of those discussions yet.
Okay.
Because what we've, you know, it's been kind of, we haven't really done a significant amount of roofing.
Okay. This is really the first rule.
But I know that we have designed, well, what we did to Hadley Addition, we had one contractor who was a Glen Allen resident who called me and was upset because of the design that we put on there. He thought we were being requesting too much of a room. He says, I can't possibly do that work for that kind of price or for a biddable price. And I explained to him that, you know, it was a design that we felt was in the best interest of the district, and we moved forward.
And with that, we have a warranty on the membrane. You know, I'm just asking because if we are, that's important. Just, you know, as long as you're maintaining it, as you said,
right.
And that's what you have to do. We have to make sure we're maintaining it properly for the people.
Joe, we spend anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000 a year in doing ongoing maintenance of all of our roofs.
No, I understand that. I'm talking about once you buy a new roof,
yeah,
you have to have a procedure in place to make sure you keep the warranty. When you price a new roof, as you said, you price a 10-year, it's a lot cheaper than you're pricing a 25-year.
Right.
So, you know, I know you guys compare those when you take the bids, but to me, it's an important equation because once you buy the longer warranty, you better maintain it in a manner that allows the warranty to still stay.
And, you know, and I've been in a spot where the previous administration had bought a 10-year roof, and I will tell you, 10 years in a day, they were having problems with that roof.
Well, the membrane's only one part of it. I mean, I understand that, but it's still, you know, you want to make sure your specs match for the bids, obviously, but you also want to let us know what we're approving, what the spec is.
Absolutely.
15 or 10-year, what have you, and that we do have in place the process to make sure that those warranties stay in place and that we're inspecting them as you would expect right before the warranty's up, so that if we can call on the warranty, we will. One of the bid packages talked about that, that we're going to be, from one of the contractors we're going to be interviewing tomorrow. You know, talked about how that's part of his program that he provides as a construction manager. So that, to me, is a solid way to process the follow. Mm-hmm. Make sure your warranties and your guarantees are followed and check before they expire. Go ahead. Just bring that up. That's like in the LinkedIn, in the write-up, we talk about there's 8 portables. We're adding 4. No,
there's 6 portables.
6 portables. We're adding 4. We may keep 4. And I just wanted to get the full explanation of that math for myself.
Well, you know, we talked about that because we have the existing 4-pack of portables up to the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
We've also talked about if we were to put this 4-pack addition on and the west end of the building, that we might possibly take all 4 of those units and bring them down to where the existing unit is at, the one that we're talking about removing out of.
The one we have a problem with.
Yeah.
But will we be utilizing all 4 of them? Or, I mean, do we need all 4?
You know, that's something that'll continue to develop over the next weeks, if not a couple of months.
Because if the numbers stay the same, you would then be using those for maybe labs or something.
Something.
Or can you take 2 of those and then you move on? Churchill's going to remain with 4. Do they need 2? I'm just asking.
Yeah, I had to cut. I want to step on that real or tag onto that real quick. But are these portables portable? Some of these things, when they, you know, we got these 2025 contracts, you know, we ditch the old ones and keep the new ones. I didn't know.
Well, some, you know, we have to keep in mind some are leased, some are owned.
Yeah.
So we would always make that decision that would be in the best interest of the district. And my goal would, if we need the classrooms, we're going to keep them. Of course, I'd rather keep the ones that we own versus the ones that are aging or are leased. So we'll make that determination. Now, what we do is, you know, these are brought in
they're portable.
They're portable.
Okay.
And, you know, we bring them in.
Yep.
You put them back together. Same thing can be done here. They can be reutilized. I don't know that I would completely recommend that, but that's certainly something that we would look at. We work with two firms. IMS, who actually we purchase or lease the units from, and then Easy Mobile is the one who puts the contractor who puts them together for us.
Do we have buyout clauses for these contracts? Are we going to get penalized early buyouts?
No, I've already talked to them a couple of years ago when we were going through the master facility plan. I know that if we were interested in purchasing, they would love to sell us a portable.
Yeah.
You know, they would much rather us buy it from them, because then we don't have to worry about the disposal cost. And they don't have to worry about it, because in 9 cases out of 10, these things are going to go back in someone's parking lot and just sit there until someone else decides to buy them if that ever happens. Yeah. So they're always looking to make a deal on these things.
Have we taken the soil borings test yet?
No, they're in the process now of being done.
They're okay, so they're going to be out at site doing them. Okay. And with stormwater issues, at the three schools that we have stormwater needs if we put on additions, are there any existing problems that we see on a reoccurring basis?
Well, yeah. I will tell you that after significant rains, or maybe not even a single large event, but continuous rain over a couple weeks, you'll see ongoing issues at the back of Lincoln. It's always soggy back there. We have complaints from Churchill, and I don't know if you've been back behind their building down in a culvert area is their detention. So, yeah, we get complaints all the time from these buildings.
And how does that cause obstacles for our children in their learning process?
Well, I don't know. Well, it causes obstacles when the kids can't play there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we can't use any of that.
So PE may have an issue? Recess may have an issue?
PE, recess, absolutely. I walked it with Scott, he was like, past a certain time of the year, it is useless to us until June.
Right.
And you're lucky if it dries out by June.
In June, they will let the kids out of school.
Yeah. So it's pretty much useless.
Okay.
That's that area.
And at times, same thing at Lincoln.
Yep.
I'm fine. And what safety, now we don't use it, are there safety issues too that go along with that? Or no? Have you seen it?
I mean, there's safety issues with having 300 kids on a little paved area at the back of Lincoln or one of those schools.
My point is, if we're talking about putting this money and doing these later, you know, versus doing it now, in the first phase, I just look at it and say, how much do you need it? And so that's where my
Sure. And I'll tell you, you know, Ron and I have reviewed some aerial photos. We even drove by Churchill the other day. There are going to be significant access issues with trying to remedy a situation at Churchill because essentially that building is buried in the back there. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of highly technological work that's going to have to be done and strategizing about how we're going to access and exit that work site.
For construction exit, yeah.
And then even for underground detention. I mean, that area sits 15 feet, 20 feet below the street, Geneva. So to go all the way back there behind that building, how are you going to get trucks and equipment and everything else back and on and off that site?
Doing it after June, so you know, I mean, try to do it in the wet year. Unless it turns out to be like Colorado this year, which is supposed to be dry, too.
So, true.
I'll left that there with me.
Now, it doesn't travel with me.
Yeah. As long as we have more time over here. We're using a $10 million number, but I look at your hard cost, and their the low is $10 million now.
10.9.
Yeah. So
that's where we've moved it to.
Okay. We're still trying to value engineer that number? So
well, we were originally at $10.1 million till we had a meeting with Lincoln, and we could only get them two classrooms, so when it went up to four classrooms, the price went up to about 10.9.
That's a budget based on historical data within the district and placeholders, allowances for the big ticket items. So the next step would be, of course, the CM coming on board to give us our estimates.
No, I understand. Are we sharing these estimates with the CM prior to them going?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a public document.
It's a moving target.
So when we look at the funding, we said we have a line of sight to $9 or $10 million right now, right?
Excluding the Lincoln reconfiguration.
Yes.
We're talking about the funding, the money that we kind of have now that we have access to today.
Right.
Is any of that in the TORT fund?
There's very little. We carry very, very little in the
Because wasn't there $4 or $5 million in the TORT fund?
No, there's $3.5 million in the working cash fund. There is about $700,000 or $800,000 in the transportation fund. There is $500,000 or $600,000 a piece in the retirement funds, which we cannot touch.
Yes.
So you can't touch debt service, you can't touch the retirement funds. The only ones that are accessible to us are working cash, education, and O&M, and there's not enough to transfer in and out of transportation because that's an ongoing issue.
Okay.
So when I was originally...
So there's not much in the TORT fund?
No. No, matter of fact, we only levy very minimally, and we only did that about 4 years ago. We started to... what happened was about 6 or 7 years ago, the district went to a general fund and a general levy concept, so that's when we consolidated all the funds. Then we had a new board, a new finance committee come on board, and they asked us to take a look at restructuring or going back to the old way of doing things, and that was to establish a separate equal fund or separate fund for each one of the areas of operation, ed, O&M, okay, transportation, yeah, solid, for, yeah, so on. So that went on for 2 or 3 years. If you didn't levy within the first 3 years in those individual funds, you would lose the right forever to levy. So that's why we went back to this individual fund concept. So now we do, in my, I believe, my levy, tort and work, working cash, we levy minimally, which is about $1,400 a year. It's like 0.0001% of the levy. So we do levy, but only minimally, just so that we never lose the ability to levy there in the future.
So now, we haven't lost that ability?
No.
Okay.
But now don't forget, I can still only get 5% or CPI in terms of a levy, no matter how I break that up amongst the individual funds. So there's still that maximum amount that we can access every year.
Okay.
Bob, I have two quick questions.
Yes, sir.
Question number one. I don't know how to break it down, but I'm trying to back into the total number, and I guess my question is that I want to do that with square footage. So if you could find out for me how much new square footage we're generating, or you add to that the existing square footage that's being reconfigured. And take that number and kind of...
Well, I think that's how Ron calculates the approximate cost that we're looking at here.
Okay.
Each building is different. Some have more, obviously, others have less. So that's how we're proposing these various cost numbers that you've seen in front of it, see in front of you.
What is the dollar amount there?
You know,
it's per square foot.
What's it for new construction? But don't forget now, you also, besides new construction, you have medium and heavy remodeling,
right,
work that goes on in there too. So I think,
right,
that would be a, and I don't mean to throw Ron under the bus right now.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but that's the question I'd like to know.
His assumptions are 252 on the low end for new constructions and 277 for hard cost only, and that was based on the Hadley addition bids. There was 24 bids. And then the remodel, he's using the Hadley LMC as his remodel for interiors. And those are much lower for remodels, 115, 116 to 130.
As far as raw construction numbers, and then you add in stormwater, mobiles, demolition, site work, you know, that pumps up the overall cost.
Right, more site work than hardcore for additions.
Asbestos abatement.
What asbestos abatement did we experience in Hadley?
Some minimal floor work. It's my understanding.
The mastic.
My understanding is that most, if not all, of the asbestos work was addressed 10, 12, 15 years ago.
Sure.
But we did run into a mastic issue, and we had to bring the, you know, our experts in, and they resolve the issue.
Yeah,
and my other question is,
yes, sir.
I know we've talked a lot about the roofs, you know, the roofs are like one big thing. And I know we talked about it at the elementaries and at Adams. And I hadn't thought about the CSO roof. I mean, what
we're
is
good. We're about
how
5 to 7
years.
You know, I think we have 5 to 7 years left on this roof.
Okay, so this is the one roof that's still relatively new.
Yeah, and you know, our roofs were divided up into sections just so we wouldn't have to put $2 or $3 or $4 million into a roof in a particular year. So we have to pick and choose which sections of the roof might need to be addressed versus another one.
On the roof thing, one thing I pointed out before, and I just want to reiterate. If we're going to spend that much money on roofs, I want to make sure 100% we need it in that year we're using it. And to me, I get caught up on remobilization. If we're going to be at Ben Franklin, it makes sense if Ben Franklin needs its roof done to do Ben Franklin's roof when we're out there doing the additions. You're going to get some economies of scale, some bidding power. If we're going to be at Churchill, you know, if that one comes up. If we're going to do Churchill's roof, even though it's across the other side of the building, to me, to have one project supervisor out there to do all those things, to have the same contractor who's bidding the additions, to bid that roof all together. Just do it in the same year. Now, if we have a roof that are just leaking like sieves,
we don't have it,
but then the game's off. Then you have to fix that problem because that could cause a bigger problem for you that those cost savings would eat up in a second. So I just want to make sure, to me, I don't want to be out at Churchill in 2014 this summer with a $150,000 roof replacement and then be there the next summer with an addition replacement. Or it wouldn't have a replacement, an addition project. I'd rather be out there doing it all at the same time. Unless somebody tells me, hey, you know what, there are no economies of scale.
Well,
I know there are because there's one superintendent on the job.
That's
paying for additional superintendent.
That's also considering that we would package our roofs as a general package too, instead
sure.
of because I've typically taken roof projects out and managed them within the district.
Right. Oh yeah.
So it just depends upon how you are going to package it as a general contract, or are you going to handle it through the district managing it. And we could do it one way or the other.
Right. Well, cost finding the cost and doing the analysis, you can figure that out. And it would be good to present it in that way.
You know, Joe, just taking a step back, once the dust settles with the additions and we set a course, short-term and long-term, then we should go back and update the long-range plan again because mechanical, boiler,
right.
unit vents, roofing, all of that should be choreographed so it all makes sense and you have continuity of warranties. So that would be the next exercise.
Yeah, go beyond the roof. You're right.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. Okay. Thanks. Oh, one quick question.
I'm sorry.
I just love this. On Lincoln, the two additions weren't colored. You just referred to it. We were at two classrooms, and then we were at four.
Two and two.
Now, but this contemplates four.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. On my printout, if the two didn't come color, I'm sure there was.
It's four.
That. I just want to make
there
sure.
is four.
But okay. Without work being done to the central core.
Four. Gotcha.
Okay, it's about 5 to 7. Any other questions that I can answer this evening? If not, we'll plan on we'll meet again on the 15th of October, and I believe by that time we'll have some. I'll be bringing you a recommendation on construction managers and capital projects, and then certainly some much greater detail on the elementary additions than what you've seen this evening.
Thank you.
The more numbers, the better.
Excellent organization.
Good job.
Thank you so much.